Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, zatting off.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
This is Frosted Tips with Lance Bass,
an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, my little peanuts. It's me, your host, Lance Bass. This is Frosted Tips with me, Lance Bass, and my co-host, Michael Turchin.
Why, hello there.
Turkey Turchin for you guys, and my husband. So I'm excited today because you know I love to reach across the pond and bring in some British acts over here.
We're going international.
We're going international, dude.
Wow.
With one of the best pop funk boy bands ever busted.
Busted.
Yes. We have James Bourne on the show today. Man, this man is so talented.
Mm-hmm.
Not only just, you know, incredible performer, musician, but he can write some songs.
Yes, Woo! He can.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that. And I'm going to go ahead and just kind of start the show early because I know we're going to go long with this one. I have so much to learn from James.
And he's done so much. So let's find out.
So let's take a little break. When we come back, James Bourne is going to be here and we have lots and lots and lots to talk about. We'll be right back.
Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, discoverla.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at world-famous studio tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
the medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. All right, James Bourne, English singer, amazing songwriter, musician, known as the co-founder of the pop punk boy band Busted, alongside Matt Willis and future Fight Star frontman Charlie Simpson. From 2001 to 2005, the band managed to achieve 4 chart-topping singles, multiple successful albums, and sell-out tours. James's other projects include the band Son of Dork, McBusted, and his own solo music. Busted has reunited for their 20th anniversary and will embark on a reunion tour in the UK this year. James Bourne, welcome to Frosted Tips.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. Crazy. Amazing to be here, actually.
Oh,
because obviously grew up loving NSYNC.
So you knew who we were over there, because we didn't spend much time.
Are you kidding?
Over in England.
Is that a joke?
Yeah, well,
I know. Lance is under the impression nobody in the UK knew who NSYNC was.
Well, because we didn't really, I don't know, we didn't spend much time there.
People knew. Yeah.
Well, I find that also, British entertainers also don't spend enough time in America too.
Yeah.
And I think it's like with Busted, I feel like, you were comfortable there. You're huge.
Yeah.
Did y'all try to break it in America, or did y'all just say, like, well, we love our country?
You know, we were the reverse case of the problem that you're describing that you don't have.
Yeah.
We started in the UK. This was before MySpace and Twitter, and the social media thing just didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but you got into magazines and the radio and television, and that's how people started to, you know, when you tell your friends you're leaving college or dropping out to start a band, and they all kind of start to wonder if it's real, mm-hmm. you know, when they see you on the, in the television or in the magazine, that's when they start to be like, oh,
this is real.
Yeah, it's real. Yeah.
That's what you always say.
Well, I know. Cause we started, you know, in Europe we were in Germany for a couple of years, and I'd left high school. Right. So all my high school friends were like, what are you doing? I'm like, I swear, we're like the Beatles over in Europe. Like, we can't go anywhere.
Wait, because this is in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, sure. And we come back to America and no one knew who we were. Yeah. No one was like, sure. Yeah.
Because I feel like I like to feel like I have my, you know, pop music history trivia on point. Did you start in Germany?
We did. Yes. We were signed to Munich, Germany. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I always felt like, you know, when my band started happening and we started going into the business, mm-hmm. I felt it was really interesting because the NSYNC was definitely a band that I knew about and followed and was interested. I was interested in your guys' story because mm-hmm. When you see, you know, people having the time of their life, you know, having a career in music and you like music and you think, oh, I have to escape. I have to find a way to get out of this, like, you know, taking exams and trying to find a job.
Yeah.
It's kind of a good option.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, that was Take That for me.
Yeah.
Like watching Take That rise. And I was just like, wow, if we could ever get to that level, oh my God, they looked like they were having so much fun.
Right. And they did come before you guys. I remember they were around in the kind of, in the first part of the 90s, mm-hmm. they were around. And you guys were sort of at the end of the 90s.
Yeah, we started, in Europe, we were there in 96, but we didn't really come to America until about 98. Okay, before we get into the group and how it all started, let's go back to the beginning. James, where were you born?
I was born in a town called Rochford, which is in Essex, which is next to London. Uh-huh. And I grew up there, you know, until about 16 years old. I was living a very comfortable, normal life. I had a perfect upbringing. You know,
did you have was your family into music?
They supported that I was. Mm-hmm. I was sort of the first one. It was like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was definitely like, what do we do with this? You know, mm-hmm. I definitely felt like, you know, I watched Back to the Future when I was eight, mm-hmm. In my, you know, and on a tiny television, and you know, I saw the scene where he plays the guitar, and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right. What instruments do you play?
Yeah, guitar and piano, and I, you know, those are my instruments that I would, you know. I can play other instruments, but I probably wouldn't feel like I would want to play them in front of people.
Were you self-taught?
I taught myself how to play the piano. Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the best instrument that you know that helps you write your songs?
Right now, it's probably guitar and piano, mm-hmm. and I find that they both help me depending on what the song is. I would, you know, if I'm holding a guitar, I write a song that might come out a little bit differently to if I'm sat at a piano, or mm-hmm. if I think of a song, if I'm driving my car and I think of a song, I might think, oh, I can't wait to try and hear what that sounds like mm-hmm. at a piano, or, you know, it depends what it is. But
do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was terrible. like 13. It was probably one of the worst songs that I would never want anyone to hear ever.
Sing it now.
It's your first song. I mean,
I started a band when I was 13 at school, you know, the kids in the band that I started when I was that, they all lived on the same street as me. Mm. Well, and I would do band practice. I would carry my amp and my guitar down the street. Mm. And, you know, we're trying to find a play when you're 13, like it's pretty hard to get, to play shows.
Yeah.
And,
you can't even get into the clubs.
Yeah. We used to get kicked out. We used to play in bars when I was like 15 and I wouldn't, they would find out that I was 15 and I would get kicked out and I wouldn't be allowed back in to get my equipment.
Oh, wow.
So like funny stuff like that would happen, but we played a show at the school and, we convinced the people at school, let us play. And, And it was kind of like my first taste of doing it. And as the older that I got, or, you know, we did that for a few years, but, you know, as school ends, a lot of the members in the band are like, I think I want to be a doctor, or I want to do this. And I never got serious about other stuff. It was right. like always just that. Yeah. And I would spend most of my weekends trying to find auditions for people who are like, you know, serious about music, wanting to do it. And I would try and find my way into a lot of things, and it would never work out. Like I, you know, I wasn't having much success. And eventually I did one of those things, and I didn't, you know, it was unsuccessful again, but the person behind the group, got in contact and said, "You're very young, but, you know, we think that it might be worth staying in touch." And yeah. there was another guy that didn't get into that band too. And we kind of didn't get into the band, but we started our band.
Yeah. Is that when Busted began?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So what was the name of your original band when you were?
When I was at school?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, it was called Sick Puppy.
Sick Puppy.
Yeah.
Sick
Puppy. And it kind of had like, it was kind of, you know, we wanted to be like Green Day, but we weren't quite that. It was, and, you know, like one of the guys in the band had an uncle that was, you know, musical. And I remember he was like, "So what's this song about?" And I was like devastated because I couldn't, like, you know, I didn't know. Yeah. I couldn't answer the question. Mm-hmm. And I was like 14 years old and I was thinking, why don't I know how to answer that? And I just kind of, you know, there were a few things that happened where I was like, maybe I have a lot to figure out, or maybe, you know, I know that I like this, but I'm probably not very good at it. Mm-hmm. But this guy, this manager who was like, "We should stay in touch, you know, play me your songs." I would play them from he was from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And he would call every day at 4 p.m. and play me some songs you wrote. And I would, and he would just straight up tell me down the phone that it sucked. And it was interesting to me because I knew that he was, a real person in the business. Mm-hmm. And your parents and your friends, they don't tell you that, you know, and it was kind of good yeah. that it was kind of good that he did say that yeah. to me. So I spent the next year or two trying to write a song that he liked. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that was kind of why I sort of found my rhythm as a songwriter was having somebody that I knew was like a reason to get better. Mm-hmm. There was sort of like a reason I had, like, if you know, I got it. I wonder what it kind of was like. It kind of bothered me, but it was like almost like a challenge. Like maybe if I can write something that he likes,
yeah,
you know, I would improve.
Mm-hmm. And so I hear there's a loose rule where every 15 songs you write, you finally get a hit.
Like, yeah, that's a good, those are good. Those are quite good odds, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard it was like 99 songs.
I haven't gotten to 15. I think I've gotten to like 9 songs I've written my entire life. So I haven't gotten to a hit song yet.
This time, babe.
Yeah.
We got in a little bit of, I think it depends as well with songs that become hits. Like, you can have a great song, but, you know, it's partly like if the right, you know, the good people have to record it too.
Yeah.
And whoever has to record it has to sort of be in a, has to be poised
right.
to sort of be in a position to have a hit. Uh-huh. Cause you know, we know that having a hit doesn't happen like in someone's living room, and only in, it has to sort of be recorded and sound yeah. great as well. Cause sometimes you could have a hit. If it's recorded badly, it might ruin the song, right?
Gosh, yeah.
Or the wrong person singing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes all the elements.
Yeah. They're all the planets.
The
performance,
the producing, the writing, yeah. the timing, talent, everything has to be.
Yeah. Everything has to be in the right place. Mm-hmm. And so for all the planets to line up, it takes a lot of things that are out of your control. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was weird because eventually I did write a song that this manager liked. Mm-hmm. And it
what
got
was
us
it, called?
It was called What I Go to School For.
Yes, we know.
And it was the first song that we released yeah. with the band. Mm-hmm. And you know, it wasn't like, you know, and it also wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like we wrote the song, you know, I wrote it with my bandmate. We came home drunk one night and he had this verse idea, but it was a cool idea, but it wasn't like, you know, it was a different lyric and some of the words were the same and one of the words rhymed with something that took us down that concept. And we finished this idea and it wasn't like completely finished, but we knew it was better than anything we had. Mm-hmm. And when we played it for our manager, it was like, it kind of really got the ball rolling for us.
Yeah.
And we kind of knew what kind of a band we were going to be. And, you know, it, mm-hmm. it kind of, it made a lot of things known
yeah.
for
yeah.
us, like that we would going to go down a certain.
Yeah. Well, what were your influences at that point? As Busted, who were y'all looking up to?
Honestly, like you guys.
Oh, yeah. Y'all didn't want to dance?
Yeah. No, I would have actually quite liked that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because I like Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the Jackson 5. And I felt like, you know, that's. It's just like the same as you guys, right? Mm. It's
kind of. I mean, that's who we idolized.
Yeah,
it was the Michael. It was the performances that we loved.
Yeah,
Michael, Janet, Madonna. You know, we were always about what can we do to entertain.
Yeah, everyone. The showmanship, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. There's like a showmanship that comes with that stuff, and I would have been really happy in that. I would have been very happy in a all singing, all dancing boy band. Yeah. But I also love, you know. I love also bands like Blink 182 and Green Day, and yeah. I like it all.
It's not too late.
Yeah, I would.
We could start an ultimate boy band.
Yeah, I would do it.
We could fulfill your dancing dreams.
Because yeah. I actually do like to. I like to do that. Yeah. But yeah, the thing is I just like good music. And yeah. I think some people see like the bands they listen to, it's a part of their identity. It's who they are. Yeah. I want to be this kind of person. So I'm going to listen to this music. And, and I feel like it's, you know, not often people just, you know, people like to their music to reflect, you know, an image or something. Yeah. So if you're everything,
right.
It's like, you don't know who you are, but right. I feel like I do like everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a lot of people would think they'd have an identity crisis, but then you can get stuck in a box.
Exactly.
And then you can't really do some of the art that would be just incredible because of like, no, I'm stuck in this little box right here.
Yeah, and we're similar to that. Like we're fans of just good songs.
Yeah,
so it doesn't matter what genre it's in. Like a good song is a good song. If it's country, if it's rock, if it's pop.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, so we're kind of do the same
thing. Yeah, I like everything. Yeah. And, you know, and I don't want to be I don't want to be like pigeonholed into a thing. I like to try different things. I like to, you know, I like to write songs for my band. I like to write songs. I like to write musicals for the stage. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to score things. If an artist that I think is cool, it doesn't even matter if they're a known artist, if I could meet them on the subway, you know, and I will work with anybody, you know, if they ask me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like.
That's great. I mean, you have done so much in entertainment. When did you decide, I'm going to tackle a musical?
Because
that is a undertaking. I mean, it takes years to do, even to get it up on the stage is almost impossible. You did it. How did this come about?
Yeah, it's, and also, I mean, it's nice that you understand that. I lived in a building and there was somebody else who I met, you know, it was when the band got big in the beginning, we got our own places eventually and we were kind of living alone. And
did y'all live together at first?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We had
I love that dynamic. That's what we did also because you literally, unless you're living together, you're not going to know if this group's going to last because you'll find out quickly who you're going to hate.
We knew in the beginning that our band was going to be short lived because Charlie, he moved out like about, you know, after a month.
Oh yeah. It's
like, and I remember when the door closed behind him, like Matt was like, this is how it's going to go.
Yeah.
But you know, it was like, it's true. You learn a lot about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got our own places and there was a neighbor in the building who I met. There was tennis courts, you know, it was one of those apartments that has tennis courts. And I just was leaning up against the fence one day watching these people that I didn't know play tennis. And he was like, you're that guy in that band. And we became friends. And I didn't really know that he was even anything to do with the world of, you know, doing musicals. I just thought that we'd become friends and he was always telling me that I should, you know, consider, cause I had another band after the band split up and he was like, there's songs in this album that lend itself to the musical theater world. And I said, it sounds like a lot of work. I don't know if we can pull that off. You know, I knew it was a lot cause I did it growing up, you know, and I knew how hard it was to do it. And there's a songwriter in Los Angeles that you probably very well aware of, Andres Carlson.
Of course.
And he's a friend of mine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? From Max Martin Dennis Pop Camp.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Andres and I are friends, good friends. And I remember I was like sitting with him, and this was after the band. I wasn't doing anything. I was, you know, didn't really know what to do next. And he was saying to me, you know, writing for people is fun, but you should maybe think about doing this. And I said, really, you think like that's a good idea? And he was like, absolutely. And I was like, huh. And I really kind of looked up to him. So I went back home and said to my neighbor, you know that musical thing you want to write? Let's do it.
Nice.
And turned out he actually knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, he did a lot of the heavy lifting on the book. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of the heavy lifting on the songwriting. And we had a good partnership. And we wrote it originally for schools, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah. The thing about musicals, it's hard to put it on. You know, to put it on properly is really expensive and a lot of work. Oh, yeah. And but then
if just to get a theater. I mean, yeah. sometimes it's a 4-year wait to even yeah. try to get a theater.
That's how it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, we knew that to have an opening night would be a nice deadline. Mm-hmm. We knew that if we had that goal, we knew that we could probably motivate ourselves to finish a first draft and go into a workshop setting and to put some kind of presentation on. And we did that. And a producer from the West End heard about it, came down and said, we're going to do it. And so from page to stage, opening in the West End was about 3 years, which yeah. is shockingly quick.
It is
yeah,
quick.
That's that very yeah. quick.
Yeah. And I, yeah. And, but you know, and it was well received in the West End and it got nominated for an Olivier Award, but it wasn't a financial success. Yeah.
Well, most aren't.
No. Yeah. yeah. And then after it closed, it got done by schools everywhere and it started to make money and happen, you know, on the amateur circuit.
Mm-hmm.
In October last year, I got an email from the company that licenses the show. Huge license came in from Japan. I was like, what is this? In March this year, I went to Japan. Show sold 60,000 tickets in Japan.
Good Lord.
And yeah, toured all over Japan. And I was there and I went to see it and it was translated into Japanese. And the show has been translated into five.
What do you think resonated so much with Japan?
Okay, they cast it right.
Yeah.
The people that produced it knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They cast people that the Japanese people cared about. They made it in Japanese. You know, Japan, like people talk like, and I'm sure you've been to Japan, but it's like they do love Western culture, but they're also very loyal to their own traditions
yeah.
and mm-hmm. they're very loyal to their own culture. And mm-hmm. and so, and you know, the majority of, you know, Japanese selling music is Japanese language music.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the fact that it was, you know, we had the guy that, you know, translated it into Japanese. He was able to make it work phonetically, you know,
right.
with the words.
Must be so hard.
Yeah. And I had dinner with him after the show and he was talking to me about it. And I was like, how did you do that? You know, mm-hmm. yeah, make it in the Japanese language is so different from English.
Mm-hmm. It's so different.
Yeah. And I had a really interesting conversation with him. And, but, you know, to see it, you know, because it was sold out in this thing. I mean, when I walked into this, it was like being in a dream. You know, because it's such a long time. 2013 was the West End. It's been a decade since yeah. it closed wow. in London to sort of show up in a other side of the world.
Yeah.
So it was a, you know, and since then there's been more interest in it. But I think musicals are interesting because they can regenerate. Mm-hmm. There's always new people that can be in it.
Yeah.
And
bring new life to it.
Well, when yeah. you did it in London, what cast did you want to put together? I mean, that must have been so fun to
yeah,
think about, wow, I'm going to cast this person I've always loved.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it wasn't easy to get the people that, you know, we probably would have, you know, out the first choices that we would have wanted that probably wouldn't have wanted to make themselves available. It's,
well, and that's the other thing. I mean, yeah. like with Broadway too, it's just to get the person you want to see if they have 6 months to take out of their busy schedule. To yeah. do it, it's almost impossible.
That's it.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And so like, if you like, I mean, it's hard to get, say, because some really like amazing A-list actors will do plays in London and even musicals. I mean, you get like Hugh Jackman does musicals mm-hmm. or whatever. But first of all, the show, Loserville's quite a young show. So for young talent, I mean, it's not easy to convince someone who's on a huge TV show to come and be in a musical that no one knows.
Yeah.
And that's what it, I mean, Loserville has got a little bit more known in the last 10 years, but it's also, it's not like it's a classic music. It's not like Hamilton mm-hmm. or Les Mis yeah. or Wicked. It's a musical that could one day, you know, have some more success if it keeps mm-hmm. going, but it, you know, there's a lot of different levels to this.
Yeah.
And convincing people to do it is hard yeah. sometimes. They have to know it.
I'm always looking for something like that. Cause if I ever went back to Broadway, unless it was a show that I absolutely just loved. You know, I wanted to do a part, great. But next time I go to Broadway, it's going to be in a new musical because I want to get Tony nominated. I want to open a show.
Yeah.
And I would think, you know, a lot of actors out there would just be searching for that. Okay, this I can finally be a part of opening a show and be a part of that.
This is good information to know.
Yeah.
You
presented that way.
Yeah, you because I've written 7 musicals now.
No way.
Wow, 7. Yeah.
And do you have time to write 7 musicals?
Because I always writing something.
Yeah.
And the thing is one of the show that I'm really excited about is a show that I wrote with a guy called Steven Sater, who had a huge hit with the show Spring Awakening. So he wrote the book and the lyrics for that show.
We saw that. I saw that opening Broadway, and then we saw the revival where they did the deaf version.
Yeah.
It was
Deaf West.
Beautiful.
It was won awards, I think.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was amazing. I'm getting chill bumps thinking of it.
It was so good.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, and that was on in LA for a little bit too.
I saw it in New York, so I don't know when it was here in LA, but woof, it was special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? I'm really regret. I've actually never seen. I saw a production of Spring Awakening at NYU because we went there to do the original workshop of the new show that I was writing with Steven. Mm-hmm. But everything else I knew about the show was from the soundtrack and listening or from YouTube, actually.
Yeah.
Promo stuff on YouTube of looking at the Tony Awards, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. But sort of like working with Steven was really cool because I was a fan of that show and I was a fan of like his work. And we've done a lot of, you know, we've written 2 shows together.
Yeah.
But you know, none of them have made it to Broadway or the West End yet, but the plan is hopefully to get it there.
So which one do you want to work on next? Which one do you want to bring to the stage?
It'd be nice to see, you know, Murder at the Gates get its opening.
And what's that about?
You know, it's a murder mystery musical.
I love a murder mystery.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a young cast. And, you know, they're fucked up rich kids and sorry, am I allowed to say that?
Yes, you can. We're podcast.
And so they are in a gated community. They're the first house in the gated community. The dad's greased a few palms. They're in early. So they're kind of isolated in this big house. And, the leading part, Cameron, it's her birthday party and she's gone through a breakup. Her mum's died and the dad's already banging the housekeeper and, you know, her friends have all ghosted her and they've all shown up on her birthday. Like she's like mortified that they're there. Mm. And, it's a murder mystery and the first murder is real and the play becomes real and, they're locked down in the house and it's a musical.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I love it. Yeah. Well, my favorite movie is Clue. I don't know if you know.
Yeah. So
Clue.
It's a lot like
this is like very, it's speaking to me.
This is very much speaking.
This is like Clue meets Clueless.
Yeah. Oh, hello. That's the best combination ever.
Yeah.
That's great. Perfect.
Cause I always thought Clue, that story would be an amazing musical. I'm like, why haven't they turned Clue into a musical?
Yeah, well, this is definitely down that street.
Nice.
Yeah. Ooh,
well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
One. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Hey, LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels.
From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, discoverla.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter.
In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, going back to Busta, what year did y'all get together? 2002?
No, 2000.
2002 was the year that we got signed.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, in England, you know, and especially, I mean, here in America at that time too, a lot of groups. I mean, just you guys had tons of boy bands, tops of, you know, punk bands. I mean, there was just lots of groups. How did you think you were going to be able to stand out amongst all that competition?
I don't know if we thought that actually in the beginning.
Probably a good thing.
I remember when we were going to get signed. I remember the kind of thing that people were saying about us was, we don't know how it fits.
Yeah,
that would come back. That'd be the feedback. You know, people would sort of, they would like us, and we would perform live in the office and all that stuff. And a lot of people would say that about us. It's like, we love it, we just don't really get where it belongs, or we don't know what it is, because it was pop music, and it was, you know. Our problem was, we liked NSYNC and Blink, you know, we liked both things. We liked, you know, I think there was, people couldn't put us in that box, right? Because we would just talk about the music that we liked and say, well, we like this and we like that. We like everything.
Your band was the perfect melting pot of the TRL era.
Yes.
But it's like, if all the groups of TRL just kind of had a baby, feel like, Busted would be that.
Exactly. We did that show.
Yeah.
And eventually, but like, and it was really fun day, actually. That was a really good memory. But it was like that in the beginning. And then we played for Simon Cowell. And he was sort of on the very, it was the beginning of his television fame. Mm-hmm. But it was so early for his TV career that he was still an A&R guy at a record company.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He wasn't like completely a TV mogul. Mm-hmm. He was venturing into TV mogul world, but he was still a guy that had an office in a record company.
He had a job.
Yeah. And we went to that office and we played for him, and it's very scary, you know, because he was the guy who was nasty to people.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said right there and then, he offered us a record deal, and we were like jumping up and down in the road outside. You know, we're going to get signed. And and then that kind of sent a ripple effect through the industry, and we met with whoever we wanted after that. And then we ended up not signing to him, but we signed to Universal, and which, you know, I would have, actually, I was probably the one that was saying we should sign to him, but you know, in a band, it's like a lot of opinions. And,
oh yeah.
It's a democracy.
Wasn't exactly upset about the deal that we got with, you know, signing, you know, with Universal. Sure. It was actually a very, you know, just signing.
I bet it was better than my deal.
Really? Well, you mean you, but I mean, this is the thing with, you know, when we, eventually we went to Germany, I remember I met Lou Pearlman.
Oh yeah.
And he came in, there was a band there called Natural.
Oh yeah.
And we would see them a lot when we were in Germany. It was like in that era.
Yeah, because Natural came a little after us, because that's when we left Lou, once we found out he was screwing us so badly. And then, yeah, he came up with Natural and O-Town and all these other
crazy
groups. I'm telling you, I did a documentary on him called The Boy Band Con. So if you want to really know the crazy history of Lou Pearlman.
I do want to watch that.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, because I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, he seems good.
I think a warning to other bands and, you know, young bands getting that first deal, definitely watch that doc before you sign that deal.
He strikes me as like sort of like a Catch Me If You Can music manager.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
And that's what he kind of was before he got caught.
The way he could lie. I mean, you believed everything, this man. I mean, he was family. We loved Lou. But I mean, everything he said, you just believed.
How do you feel about him now?
I'm totally at peace with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it took a lot of therapy, I think. You know, the older you get, the more you're like, wow, why do I still feel this way about this person 25 years ago? And then you kind of just get to a point where I don't care anymore. I forgive, you know, it shouldn't eat on me at all. And I do that with so many people in my life. I just, I don't care anymore. I just want to move forward and look to the future and never look back.
Huh. Yeah, it's interesting.
Did y'all have bad management at first?
We were lucky.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I think about this? It never goes exactly the way you want it to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like, never. You know, and I don't know. I've never met anyone where it has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've experienced in my career, I've been in a band. I've helped other artists. I've helped other bands happen. I've written for other artists. I've been on, even on the music publishing side, you know. I've signed people. Mm-hmm. And I've seen what it's like to be on the other side when you have someone who's hopeful of having a career. And I think it's very challenging because, you know, as a manager, if it's not going well, you're kind of to blame. Yeah. And if it's going well, why isn't it going better? I'm not justifying any of that extra stuff that you, because that's like criminal activity.
But
what I'm saying is that even so, like it feels like when we've both been quite lucky in our careers, and I think that there's a deep sense of appreciation and gratitude that even though you can go through, because I did go through some stuff, it wasn't directly from management, but there are things that have happened that have been very difficult. But the appreciation and the gratitude that you have for the success that's happened is greater than.
Of course.
And I think that if you're fortunate enough that like it balances out that way, you can say that.
And it's all about how you pivot.
Yes.
I mean, that's the challenge right there.
And experiences that you had with it, right? So think about like the things that you learned from it. Like think about, you know, what you now know from those experiences is probably invaluable stuff, you know?
Oh gosh. And I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I went through that at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I got through all the worst parts of my career, you know, the negative parts by the time I was 24 years old.
Yes.
So, you know, I just...
That's a real privilege.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a blessing for sure.
And better than going through it when you're 50. You
yeah. know? And I'll just get screwed and I have no time left.
Exactly.
Okay. So the group is together. You come out with the first song that you wrote for the group, which was a, you know, smash hit. What's interesting to me is, and it's funny because the year 3000, the song you wrote, I think that was your second release, maybe?
Yeah.
The second?
Okay. Yeah, it was the second one.
Because I know y'all did, your first hit was number 3, then it went number 2, and then you went number 1. So it went 3, 2, 1, which was, we stopped. We went to number 2, got beat by the Teletubbies, and we never went back to England.
Right. I think that's what happened. That was the Teletubbies.
The Teletubbies premiere.
Smacked them
in
the face.
Theme song went number 1, and you know, it was tearing at my heart. That was going to be our big breakout in England. And then it just went number 2. And then no one ever talked. They're like, oh, Teletubbies.
He just ran away.
We're never coming back.
Yeah, but you know, it was a banger. But you know, year 3000 went to number 2, and it's bigger than all the number ones we had.
Yeah, it's like Bye Bye Bye. It wasn't number 1. It wasn't our number 1 hit,
but it's a classic.
That's the one people know.
That's the one people know. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's funny because when he was like listening to the group, he was like, "Yeah, it reminds me of Joe Bro, like Jonas Brothers, like the American, you know, the British version of the Brothers, and they're the ones." They first started getting attention because of the song Year 3000 that you wrote.
They was covered sort of the beginning,
Yeah, and most people in America obviously don't know that it was an original song by Buster.
No, and it's, you know, it's such an interesting story because, you know, my band broke up and, you know, the industry, I think there were people that, you know, there were people in the record industry that are transatlantic people. Mm-hmm. And there was one of those guys, a guy called Dave Massey, and...
Wait, I know Dave Massey. How do I know Dave Massey?
Well, he's been around.
Yeah.
Yeah. He called me in like 2006 and he, you know, he was like, "Hey, it's Dave." Mm. And he was like, "You know, I've been writing songs that Nick Jonas had been recording as, you know, very young." He was still, when I went to Stockholm for the first time, he was the one recording the songs that I was writing when I was there with those genius dudes.
Yeah. And when did you meet that Sharon studio group? Because we were there when Dennis Pop was still alive. That's okay, how old I am.
No, you were there at the time when everyone wanted to be there.
It was the Robin, the Ace of Base. Like it was the moment for Sweden.
Yeah, you. I really want. I would love to talk. I mean, I would talk to you about that for, you know, I would really go down the rabbit hole with you. But I think the thing about that whole building, by the way, that building is fascinating.
Yeah.
The way that, you know, the way the live room is shared by the different control rooms and, you know, but I always wanted to go there and work with those people. And eventually when I kind of got my own thing happening, I was invited to go there. But Nick Jonas was recording the songs I was writing when I was there. Mm-hmm. And it was like Dave Massey called me and said, "It's not going to happen for Nick's solo career." And Nick's like probably still really young at this point. Yeah. And he was like, "But he's got two brothers and we like, you know, doing like something like Busted and maybe we can record Year 3000 if that's okay." And I was like, "Yeah, but I don't think you need my permission for that. I think you just cover the song." Mm-hmm. He was like, "There's a couple of words that we don't want to say on Radio Disney." And I was like, "Oh, like what?" And he was like, "Well, we don't want to say this. We don't want to say that." And
can't say sex.
Yeah, exactly. And
they're wearing their purity rings at that point.
Well, exactly. There were some lyrics that I understood that couldn't be in it. And I was like, "Look, I really don't want to stand in your way. And I also don't want to rewrite the song because the song's a song.
Yeah.
If there's a couple of words you want to switch out, then switch them out. But I don't, but like, I'm sure that, you know, you're probably better at knowing what they are than, you know." Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, they just figured it out. And then I honestly didn't think that I would ever hear about it again.
Yeah.
I thought that was the last that I would hear of it. Mm-hmm. You don't think, you can't predict that.
No, of course.
You know, so it was like when I came out here, I remember I was at a friend's house and there was a Miley Cyrus concert and the television was on and I was in the house and I heard a song that I thought was familiar and realized after about 40 seconds in that it was actually
your song.
Yeah. And the guys on stage singing it with the Jonas Brothers and the kids in the house were like, "This is huge." Mm-hmm. I was like, "Really? How was that?"
That's my song.
Yeah.
That must be some nice residuals coming in from that song. I mean, two big groups doing that song.
When the band breaks up, it's nice to have stuff like that happening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, and it's also kind of, you know, it's nice because it's just, it's sort of like a, it's a sign that you can kind of continue on, really, mm-hmm. and try and do other things. There's more to life than just doing one thing. You can have success with other things.
One fun thing y'all did was, you know, Band-Aid.
That was really funny.
But, I mean, I'm pretty sure most people know, Google if you don't know what Band-Aid is.
Yeah.
So y'all did Do They Know It's Christmas, the remake, with incredible artists. You had Paul McCartney, Chris Martin, Bono, you guys. What was it like? Did you get to meet any of these artists? Did y'all get to perform it and you get to geek out that that's Paul McCartney standing right next to you?
You know, if you watch the video, Paul McCartney isn't, there's a huge crowd of people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in that crowd of people were the people that were there the day that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing that happened was, it was one of those weird things where it's like, it's big news, you know, it's national news. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were going in to record that day. And I remember as we were walking in, it was like a delay by like 5 minutes on the news. And mm-hmm. we went in, the news was on, and we saw ourselves on the news 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was just 5 minutes ago, like, stuff like that. And then, you know, we went in and I was pretty like, I was so like, there were so many times back then where I was kind of like just like caught up in what was happening, or I'd miss really key things. And this guy comes over and was like, thanks for being here. And I said to my bandmate, I said, who is that? And he goes, it was Bob Geldof.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And I was like, oh.
Sounds like me.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
that is Lance to a T.
And but he was wearing the iconic T-shirt that he wore in the original Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did like a speech about, you know, remember the reason why we're here. And, you know, I think when you're in a band and you get invited to be a part of something like that, you can get caught up a little bit in, oh, who's here?
Mm-hmm.
This is a fun experience. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, what he did is he took that away and was like, this is why we're here.
Yeah.
You know, and he it was about, you know, people are starving in Africa. And
but I'm sure a lot of money was raised for this. Do you know how much ultimately was?
I don't know, but I know that there's a reason they try to do it every now and then. Cause you know, like, it's interesting. You know about that.
Yeah.
Fun memory.
I love that little fact. Cause I've always wanted, I was a part of something like that. Michael Jackson put something together for September 11th. I'm so confused if it ever came out, because I feel like that song never really released, but I remember recording.
You had I know nothing.
Exactly.
Of this.
Yeah. We did a whole Band-Aid type.
Are you sure? Did you dream?
Was this
one
for
night?
Hurricane? No, not, this is for September 11th.
September 11th, I believe. Yeah.
He did a Hurricane Katrina thing, didn't he?
Oh, maybe he did that too. I forget.
Well, he did so much, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did a few things.
And the Black Eyed Peas did one.
No, because there was that night when you performed with the Jacksons.
Yes, that was in New York. That was
right before 9/11.
It was 2 days before
9/11. That was right.
Yeah, and you know, I remember it well because I watched that. And so, yeah, because David Guest did that, didn't he?
Probably, yeah. I mean, everyone did that show.
Yeah.
He
produced it. Didn't he produce the show for TV?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did.
I think he did.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because a friend of mine, you know, so Matt from my band was in a reality TV show with him.
Yeah. Which one was it?
It was in the jungle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, celebrity.
Yeah. And, you know, they became quite good friends in there. And when they came out, I would hang out with, you know, them all the time. Like in the month afterwards, you know, when you kind of been in a jungle together, everyone wants to hang out all the time. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so I met David through my friend in my band, and it was through him I actually ended up producing a song for Tito Jackson's kids.
Yeah. The 3T.
Yeah.
Yes, 3T.
Yeah. I really like those guys.
Yeah. I remember 3T because they started the same time we did in Europe. So we would always run into them in Germany.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so cool. I'm like, oh my gosh, we know like some Jacksons.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's pretty, it's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. But what was it like? Cause you, Because when you did the show with them, because you danced with, was it Dance Machine?
Yeah, Dance Machine.
Yeah.
It was the last performance of the Jackson 5, which was like insane. So we go there and we had done some stuff with Michael at that point. We had become good friends and he had just performed with us at the VMAs.
Yeah.
We had released Pop and had no idea if he would.
Oh my God, that performance is so good.
He comes at the end and starts dancing.
Yeah, the Etch-A-Sketch, right?
The Etch-A-Sketch, yeah. Uh-huh. Had no idea he would really show. Literally, I'm on stage and just hoping God. That when that Etch-A-Sketch came up that he was going to be
standing
there.
Know that he was
going to? No! He said he'd be there, but there was no rehearsal. And we couldn't even tell MTV. MTV had no idea this was going to happen.
Oh, wow.
They thought Janet was going to show up. But then it happened and it was just a moment. And then we did his 30th anniversary, special 2 days later and it had, Whitney, but everyone hit that stage.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean, Britney and Usher and I mean, just everyone. Maya, yeah. And we had no idea, we knew we were going to do Jackson 5 fun, but I had no idea Michael was actually going to do a concert and just do a full on set. And it was the first time I'd seen him.
You
live.
Didn't know that?
No, not at all. And so I sat I went into the audience. I'm like, I have to see this. And I had a tear in my eye. I'm like, I get it. I get why people cry now. What is this?
It's just a single tear.
It's just weird.
The Michael Jackson thing, I mean, you saw it. I mean, when it was like a different thing, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was. It didn't matter. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter how successful you were. It didn't matter how many records you sold or how what the hell was going on. He was just sort of above
everyone
stratosphere.
It didn't get bigger than that.
No.
And it didn't matter. Yeah, it was
just his influence on everyone. That's what's so spectacular.
I know.
Any artist you talk to, whatever genre, they always bring up Michael.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And it was actually crazy cuz for me that's where it all started, was like being a Michael Jackson fan and mm-hmm. And I remember seeing, I waited up because, in England, the time difference is a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that there was something going on. It's the VMAs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Etch-A-Sketch thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So when that happened, it aired in England. When it happened, it was like 2 a.m. or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was probably live at 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember like waiting up for it and falling asleep and like waking up. Thinking, did it and then when it happened, I remember, you guys on stage. Mm. I remember watching thinking, there's something about this performance that's a little extra. Because there was a lot of set in it.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot.
Yeah, a lot of set
tons
design.
Of dancers.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I was like, there's something going on here. And I was literally like keeping my eyes open because I didn't want to miss it.
Mm.
And I remember that. Like that whole thing was just so crazy.
That's why I couldn't stop just watching the audience. Because it was great that Michael was right next to us, but I just watching everyone's kind of jaw to the floor because no one expected it. Because it's been a while since we had seen Michael on stage. Anyone.
Yeah.
He's been, he was kind of on a little hiatus for a while. But man, to see Jay-Z and Beyonce, everyone's like, oh my gosh.
I need to go back
and
watch
I know this guy. I know this guy.
He's my friend.
But when on the Madison Square Garden thing, when you're all there, right? And you're all dancing.
Yeah.
Do you ever like look to your left or your right?
The whole time. If you watch my performance, I'm not even looking anywhere except to my left or right. I'm just like what is my life right now? I'm here with the Jackson freaking 5.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. But to be able to say that we were the last to perform in the Jackson 5 is just such a, that's just such a moment.
Just hold on to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that on my resume.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
You should.
And your life must have changed after that.
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, it was interesting because that was definitely probably the all-time high for NSYNC, that moment and that special. And then 9/11 happened and everything just went pop and just disappeared. And I don't think anyone's ever recovered. I think that was the downfall of NSYNC. I think that was the start. Yeah. Because, I don't think anyone really recovered from that.
Breaking news.
Yeah. Because no one was doing concerts. Film was done. I mean, just everyone was in such a depressed mood that no one was thinking about music or going to see a concert of a boy band.
No.
And I feel like that it just kind of music and fun music fizzled out after that for a bit.
No, wait. That wasn't the end. Was it?
No, we had another album, Celebrity, after that.
Which was great.
It was great, but it was considered a flop.
Even though
it sold 6 million albums, and it was
a flop.
And it was considered a flop.
Such a disaster.
Yeah. People were like, "Oh, that's the end of NSYNC. They didn't beat No Strings Attached." I'm like, who's going to beat No Strings Attached? It was just, that was an insane time that will never happen again until Adele.
2.4 million albums in week one. Yeah. Right?
And yeah. Was that what it did? Six and a half million.
Yeah. And that was considered like...
Isn't that a fastest selling album of all time?
Until Adele beat it a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, eventually that...
Eventually. But that was a good run.
It was a good run.
Like 15, 16 years.
It was a good run. Yeah. But I liked having that title because it was the only thing that I could hang my hat on for a while. And then Adele just comes and sweeps it back. And I'm thinking, well, that'll never be broken because no one camps out for albums anymore. And no one buys an album. The singles market. And then Adele comes in and just... kills it.
No, I think
she had
like
4 million the first week.
No, she had 3 point.
It's insane.
Something. Yeah.
Insane. It's 3.2, in a market that no one buys albums. That's crazy. That is crazy.
You guys have to get back together and just do a new album.
Yeah, just to beat Adele.
Just to beat Adele if you want to get it back.
The celebrity album was brilliant.
Yeah, I loved that.
That was a great one.
Celebrity to me was great because we were finally coming in to our own as musicians. You know, the first two albums, you know, you're just so busy. You're just trying to make everything work. Finally, we had time from No Strings Attached to Celebrity. We had some time. Yeah. We had some off time. So we were in the studio writing. And so most of that album was written by, you know, one of the members of NSYNC. And it just was more of our style. It was evolving for sure.
I thought that too.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see where that would have gone after that. But yeah, we were definitely growing up, I think.
And do you think... because I think a lot of people wonder what it would be like if you did it now.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Everyone's wondering. Hey, we'll see. Like, never say never.
Hey, LA. Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, DiscoverLA.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing
right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you excited about right now that you're working on?
I'm excited about the band coming back.
Well, tell us about the 20th anniversary. I know y'all are going on tour. Are we going to get new music with it?
Yeah, we're releasing a new song in a couple weeks.
Oh, nice. What's it called?
It's called Good One.
Good One. All right. Yeah.
And it kind of, you know, it's a bit different. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit something new from what we've done before, but still feels like a busted song, but. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm sort of excited to go back on tour because it's been like 5 years and the pandemic really stopped everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited about that.
What's your favorite part about, because what I love about this industry is you get to tour for a few months, then you get back in the studio for a few months. So it never gets boring. You know, by the time you're kind of like, kind of wish this tour would end. I'm not sweating anymore. Then you get in the studio. Yeah. Then by the end of the studio, you're like, kind of tired of being in this box right now. I want to get back on the road.
Yeah.
So it kind of, I don't know, it equals out.
The seasons changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Studio, being on stage, and obviously.
So do you have a favorite?
I like them both. I love to record. I think like making music and releasing music is just as important. Sometimes I go through times I make a lot of music, I don't release any music, and it's like breathing in and not breathing out, you know.
Yeah.
It's like kind of you want to release the stuff you're excited about.
Yeah.
And then sometimes enough time goes by and you're grateful that you didn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, you're like, oh, that would suck. I say that all the time about NSYNC. I'm so glad that no American label signed us back in 95, 96, because we wouldn't have made it at all. Thank God we got to go to Germany, train ourselves better, figure out what our sound was, and then come back to our country, because they would have laughed us out of this country if we were released in 95. It would have just never worked.
Do you think that like having that story, that foundation of overseas, like with Germany, was very key to...
Yeah. Definitely. It's what bonded us the most. It made us family. We really got to know what our sound was. We know we worked with techno and things that we would just never touch today. Yeah. Right. But we just had to, test it out and see what happens. And we really listened to our fans. So we would do something and the fans would just go crazy on something we didn't think that they would even like.
Wow.
We would just kind of go with it. Like, okay, this is what the people want. Let's give it to them. Let's finish with this because we have some fan questions for you. So Lubortha wants to know, what is your favorite McBusted story that no one knows? Now, for you Americans listening, McBusted is a joint group.
Yes.
From McFly and Busted.
Yes. I think the thing about that's most, I think the craziest thing about that whole thing, the way it happened, was how easily it could not have happened.
Yeah.
And what happened as a result of it happening. Mm-hmm. Is so crazy. It's like such a sliding doors moment. Yeah.
Because, Kismet.
Yeah, because I had like I had a relationship that was went back, you know, to the beginning of McFly. You know, I was a big part of that band starting and working with Tom before he knew who his band were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was a big part of inspiring like what the band became.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, when they got signed and like you said, you know, you make the NSYNC and Backstreet reference. In England, it was a little bit like Busta and McFly.
Oh, yeah.
Had a little
bit. Oh, that was your BSB?
Yeah. It was a little bit of that going on. And I think that a lot of people in interviews would say to me, do you think that you're sort of doing the right thing, putting, you know, so much work into this other thing, you know, you're in this thing and now this band is becoming big now. And I never really thought of it that way. I just loved writing songs and I didn't think that I was phasing myself out. I thought I was just doing more stuff. But eventually when my band broke up quite recently after that, I did wonder because, you know, the management who managed both bands, I wondered if they would work harder to keep Busted together if there wasn't another option.
But
you know, very quickly when my band broke up, I wasn't just not in my band. I wasn't really in the equation at all anymore.
Yeah, really.
So it was sort of like two bands that I was sort of very much a big part of my life that wasn't around. And then 10 years later, when I visited them, I'd been living in the States for all these years and I came back and cause see them play that performance. It was like one of the guys, you know, in the band, it was like a joke almost to go out on stage and play some songs.
Yeah.
And I think people, that could have quite easily not happened.
Yeah.
And
it's weird you say, cause you had the same management. I always wonder that too, cause our management also did Justin's solo project.
Yes.
I'm wondering, well, if we had separate management, would the band have still continued somehow? You know, would they have figured it out? Like, okay, we're going to figure this out where y'all can still make music with NSYNC and still have this solo.
Yeah. Because it's interesting. It's interesting because I think like now when people are incentivized, there are people who matter in the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Your manager is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. And there has to be a common goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that is. It's like, I think all of a sudden that night, even though Busted was effectively a broken band, when I did it by myself in front of their audience,
mm-hmm.
it worked. It was like it was alive.
Yeah.
You know, so it's alive and then we're going to fill in the missing pieces with a whole band, which is going to make it more exciting.
Yeah.
And that's that. And it kind of led back to Busted.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like a Stargate back. This thing that kind of started 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
was a Stargate back to the future.
That's great.
Yeah.
Back to the future. It always comes back to
it does come back.
Uh-huh. On the same note, Fan for Life 143 wants to know, did McBusted start because of the NKOT BSB, the New Kids on the Block BSB collab?
Do you know what? We spoke about that, actually,
mm-hmm.
because we did when we were talking about it, it was like definitely a reference point.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that tour, so I wasn't sure if it was them on stage all at the same time or if
I think
it was...
so. I didn't see that tour either, but I think they all went on stage at the same
time. At certain times. Yeah, it was like back and forth. Yeah. And
it's like what Jay-Z and Justin did, you know, on that tour. Just kind of like, perform, you perform.
So
perform
in that together. Case, in that case, it must have been similar to that. It was really interesting. There was not really, it was a very 50-50 on what the opinion was if it was even a good idea.
Oh yeah.
Some people, cause it was a bit of a gamble, but
mm-hmm. Well, it worked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When will Busted tour America from J Martin 720?
It's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I would love to do it. I just don't know. I don't know if it will happen. If we did, it would probably have to be, it's hard to justify a tour of America that would be on the level that we would tour at here.
Right.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, we just, the truth is I don't know if like, doing all this stuff with the Jonas Brothers will, you know, will make any difference. I just think that our audience seems to be where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if that changes, amazing. But I'd like to think, you know, in a dream scenario, we could make sense of touring here. But and I would love to do that.
Yeah.
But I just don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, we now, I have another question. You just recently released Umbop 2.0.
With Hanson.
With Hanson.
Yeah.
And also 2.0 with the Jonas Brothers song.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, because I was reading that and I was like, I've been telling Lance they need to do like a 2.0.
Like NSYNC 2.0.
If they
song,
ever did an NSYNC song, which would be amazing.
It's an interesting thing to do because I think there's a lot of love for these old songs.
Mm-hmm.
People love these songs. And if you can create a new way, a new version, I mean, if you look at like back in the day, like even like songs in the 70s got recorded like hundreds of times, you know. And you know, the song is like the land and the recording is like the house, and you can build a lot of houses on the land. You know, it's like a different version is also a good idea. You also want to be careful though, because you can don't want to release a bad version.
Yeah,
you don't want to like
degrade it.
Yeah,
it's got to be better.
Got to be better.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it also kind of, I mean, a lot of fans will never be happy with remake type things. They're like, no, you can't touch the original.
I know. It's like what you think. It's kind of like you can't really.
No, you can't win.
All right. So before we let you go, we need to know, what are we watching on television right now? What musicians do we need to be looking out for? Can you give us any good bits?
Yeah, I like White Lotus.
Okay. Oh,
season.
Yeah. That's
amazing. Yeah. They're doing season 3 soon, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like both those seasons.
So good.
I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
I like a lot listening. I like Bruce Hornsby.
Okay.
I like the Top Gun soundtrack. I like listening to film music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like listening to James Taylor. I was actually, a friend of mine told me about a really cool artist. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Okay. Oh, Dijon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, we're right there. We need new music.
I know. We always need good recommendations. Dijon. All right. Yeah. We're going to do that.
So I really thought it was really good. And songs are really good. And he's
okay,
really good.
Well, good to
nice. Know. Okay, we'll check that out. James, it was so great to catch up with you.
Yeah.
See you again.
So interesting.
I love that you're here in Los Angeles, you know, most of the time. So I'm glad that we're going to be able to run each other, because we've got lots of things. We have things to do.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, we got this. Is there anything you would like to tell your fans out there, and how can everyone stay in touch with you?
Thanks for listening. This is fun to talk to you guys, and I'm on Instagram and social media, and I try to post when I can. I'm getting really bad at posting. I'm always doing something, and it's usually on my socials.
All right.
Awesome.
We'll be checking it out. All right, James, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thanks, thank you.
Yay.
Mr. James Bourne, everyone.
What a lovely man.
I'm going to say it.
Very nice guy.
Every single guest is just the nicest guy. I'm glad we've met, you know, a few times throughout the years. Miami, now he lives in L.A.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know the full story of James.
So I know.
And we share the same first name.
And I remember like his group vaguely. I didn't know music, but I just remember like different magazines or stuff, seeing like McFly and Busted, like the European ones.
Right.
And so it's actually kind of interesting now to like now see the whole history of those bands.
I know. All right, guys. Well, that is all the show I have for you. Please stay cool out there.
Yes.
It is a hot one.
Lord.
Be good to each other. Don't drink and drive. Take care of those animals, especially in the heat.
Yes. Lots of water.
And
put them inside.
Keep them hydrated. And we will see you next time on Frosted Tips. But until then, stay frosted. You missed it, turkey. We'll try that again.
There was an over there. I was.
And until then,
stay frosted.
Hey, thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at Frosted Tips with Lance
and Michael Turzenart,
and at Lance Bass for all your pop culture needs.
And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars, 6 if you can. See you next time.
Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass is zatting off.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.